Those that don't know me, I'm Stephen Taylor. I'm the president and CEO of the Sjogren's Foundation, and we're honored to have this afternoon's talk by Lori Lang, but also we've been honored to be able to offer such great talks over the past few weeks. And again, we have two more talks after today's talk, one on a products. We have various representatives from companies coming to join us next week to share their products with you because we know many of you use a number of products to treat your disease. And then the week after is a call about an update on where we are with our scientific and medical initiatives. So, but today we're honored to have Lori Lang here again. She's a good friend of the foundation. She's spoken for us several times at our National Patient Conference. She's a registered dietitian and a licensed dietitian nutritionist based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She specializes in holistic nutrition and lifestyle strategies for health promotion to help suppress inflammation and autoimmune conditions. Today, Lori is going to discuss kind of taking control of your eating while we're all kind of stuck inside. She might not specifically delve into everything around Sjogren's and eating. She's going to do a talk that will hit a lot of topics that will help us and our family members as well. And so I know you'll enjoy Lori. We've had great reviews from her for our conferences, and we consider her a friend. So I will turn it over to you, Lori.
So thank you so much, Stephen. It's really nice to see you.
Yes.
My goodness, so I see this 81 people out there. Awesome. Even if I can't see you. So, Stephen used an interesting word that we are at a particular lack of right now in our world, and that is control. So we have control over so little, which may be true all the time from you know, different perspective, but certainly in these times it's true. And the thing that we do have control over are the choices that we make, the thoughts that we think, how we communicate with each other. So what I'm going to focus on is, you know, let's take control of taking better care of ourselves so that we not only boost our immune systems, we enhance our resilience to deal with whatever comes down the pike. And so I'm really happy to be with you here today and, you know, to kind of get started. So, you know, I always start on my cards and on here is the great Hippocrates quote, "Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food." So really, I'm a food is medicine kind of practitioner. And so that's really where I want to begin. So the next slide, if we go next slide, yes, that we already sort of just discussed all that. So let's just blow past that and get right into today's focus. Yep, next one's great. Okay. To maximize food as medicine. So, you know, when I talk to clients about the foods that we eat, I use this framework that, and if any of you were at the conference in Boston last year, where I was honored to be, and it was really wonderful. You know, I talked a little bit about this framework that I use, which is three buckets. So, you know, I usually relate to clients by starting with this three bucket framework that says we can put food into a bucket that is harmful for us, the bucket that is more neutral, neither helps nor hurts us, and then there's that magic therapeutic food is medicine bucket, which at the cellular level does so many different things. It can be that it's anti-inflammatory. So no matter what we're talking about, foods that fight inflammation are also generally the ones that boost our immune systems, that help us from a neurotransmission perspective, so help us with mood and cognition and staying level. So we'll talk about that framework and how to put it all together. And so of course that involves eating a whole food nutrient dense diet. So let's look at the next slide. So a picture of where we kind of want to begin with talking about a therapeutic food as medicine bucket kind of plate. And the other thing that I want to say, so it's not an all or nothing proposition. Certainly what we can do just is increase the amount of foods that fit into that therapeutic bucket and look for ways, even in our current times, which may, you know, involve more limited trips to the grocery store. So ways to talk about how do we, you know, bring in sturdier food and be more creative with the things that we throw together that really cover a lot of this ground, cover a lot of these elements. So number one, and I always talk about this, doesn't matter what the topic is, and this is to fill our plate with beautiful rainbow colored veggies, especially cruciferous veggies. So it's a really favorite topic, and that's a great photo, which doesn't look so different. We'll see if you can actually see what I have here. But my cat's sniffing around. It's like, what do you have on the floor here? This is really interesting. Let me chew a little bit on this. So, you know, so a lot of cruciferous vegetables actually are sturdy. So in this bowl, I have two families, some cruciferous, and then I'll talk to you about, you know, some of the rest of them. And then I also have another immune-boosting antimicrobial family represented here, which is the allium family. All these vegetable families, as we're, in quarantine, either alone like me and my kitty, or with your own actual biological family, not your vegetable families. But the cruciferous family is the one that contains the ones that are pictured here and also listed, which extends to broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, which is, so my favorite is purple, because the brighter the color, the more pigment, and as a result, the more antioxidant value. And I can give a little a little definition of antioxidants and free radicals. So this is really sturdy. So this beautiful half a cabbage, you know, I've actually had for a couple of weeks. I use it in soup. I roast it. I saute it. I eat it raw in salad. So this is a really nice sturdy one. Another beautiful one. So besides the main crucifers, the broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, there's also kale and collard greens. Now this is my in my particular favorite kind of kale, which is the kind that's called dinosaur kale or lacinato kale. And I just like the texture and the flavor better. And it's really easy to just separate it from the tough stalk and slice it into ribbons and make sauteed beans and greens, which is another food that I'm going to talk about a little bit as we try to move through really kicking up the cruciferous and vegetable stuff, and also looking at getting enough protein. Because something I also want to remind everyone of is, although it's not usually an American problem to not get enough protein, protein is the building block from which all immune factors are made. So we do want to also concentrate on getting enough protein in the diet. And I'll talk a little bit about, you know, a little calculation. It looks like somebody has a question. Okay. So I'll address that question later, or that can come up later. So
real quick, this is Steve. I just wanted to tell people, if you are on gallery view and you have all the tiny little squares like Brady Bunch, you can go to speaker view up in the right-hand corner of your screen, and that'll bring up Lori and just her PowerPoint, so you can see what she's holding up in case you're stuck in that Brady Bunch gallery view. So up in the right-hand side, speaker view, and that'll bring her up, and then this PowerPoint next to her, so you can see what she's holding up, et cetera. And then we'll get to questions. Whenever you're ready for questions, let me know, Lori, and then we'll go through the questions that are either through the chat room or through when they raise their hands.
Awesome. Later. Perfect. Okay. Got it. Well, so what I wanted to then say is, you know, some of the reasons why I always talk to folks about cruciferous vegetables are they really were in on the ground floor of knowing that food fights cancer. So definitely has a lot of therapeutic and I use the word magical superstar qualities. You know, in addition to fighting cancer, they cruciferous vegetables also detoxify environmental toxins and other things that are out there. It clearly also has antimicrobial properties. So that word, antimicrobial, you know, in a one fell swoop, contains antibacterial and antiviral and antifungal. So all of the microbes that harm our bodies, these vegetables naturally fight against or naturally help to eliminate, in addition to being, you know, beautiful and filled, beautiful, sturdy, and you know, easy to eat. So when I talk to folks, you know, and I talk about this is one of my favorite things to talk about. They're like, oh yeah, sure. You know, I like that stuff. You know, I eat broccoli or whatever. And I'm like, oh great. When you say you like broccoli, so how much do you eat? I'm like, you know, I have a half cup once or twice a week. That's not food as medicine. That's, you know, that's a bite. But then to ratchet it up to the dosage, you know, and then and so sometimes using that word medicine is the difference between dosage. So a half cup a couple of days a week isn't going to get you where we want to be here. So what more like gets you where you want to be? And I know that this might be a little startling to some folks. What I have in the next bullet point is try for 8 servings a day. So first of all, let me just qualify that by saying, so if you look at that and you say, oh my gosh, that's never going to happen. I that's just not part of what my palate likes or whatever. Then fine, just try to increase. But if you like this stuff, and we can talk about different ways to bring it in at multiple meals and snacks, just know that when it says 8 servings of veggies, and it's not just cruciferous veggies, you know, 8 servings of vegetables a day just really is about 4 cups. And 4 cups isn't so much. Now, so also know that if before you were eating a half cup, a couple of times a week, if you have a half cup a day, that's an improvement. If you have 1 cup a day, that's an improvement. So just let's talk about some ways that it can happen. So it's not just, you know, frozen broccoli that you steam and have dry, or with a squeeze of lemon at dinner, and you have to kind of get yourself through, or raw broccoli that you really can't, you know, enjoy unless you dip it into something like blue cheese or something like that. It can be it can be done so many different ways. So just a suggestion is, if to eat it, you know, more ways and more volume. How many people out there roast vegetables on a regular basis? I can't see your hands right now because I'm looking at the presentation and a couple of faces over here. But if you're nodding your heads and you're saying, yes, indeed, I do roast some vegetables, you know, that can be one of the things that you change about this shelter in place deal. Maybe you do it with your family. Maybe you wash them, cut them, put them on a put them on a cookie sheet, and maybe you do 2 trays of multiple colored different vegetables and toss them in lots of garlic. Here, let me also give you a little idea of when I said there's another family I want to talk about, which is the allium family. So here in the allium family, I'm holding up some green onions, a head of garlic, and a purple onion. So all of the vegetables that are in that family. So the allium family includes every variety of onion, so that's leeks and scallions and purple onions and regular onions and garlic and shallots. All those things are in the allium family, and that family goes back millennia in terms of the health, you know, the health values. So epidemiologically, that's the study of different cultures and their health habits over time. Some you know, go back to, this is biblical times, recorded history. People have been eating garlic and onions to fight disease forever, and even before they understood that there are compounds in them that actually do that, they just could observe it. They could observe it in their culture. So for instance, when you're doing all those beautiful roasted vegetables, rainbow colors, you can chop some garlic, use olive oil, which is again another food item that has lots of history in terms of its goodness and knowing that it does really well. You can have fresh herbs. So whether that's rosemary and dill and basil, and here I've just made a bunch of stuff with fresh cilantro and fresh dill, which is delicious. But so you can have those trays of roasted vegetables that you can, yes, of course you can have it as a side dish with dinner, but you can also have, here's some different ways of thinking about it. Depends on who you are, but this is what I do for breakfast almost every day, is have, you know, a beautiful plate of leftover rainbow colored roasted vegetables that I then put in a bowl and, you know, microwave it for, you know, 45 seconds, and then have a nice egg, over easy egg on top of it, and let the yolk for those of you who eat, you know, eggs or eat animal protein, and let the yolk drip over it like a sauce. I then may, sometimes I, and this works great for kids too, line the edge of my bowl with the segments of mandarin oranges or oranges, which, so it's beautiful. Then I have all these rainbow colors, the egg, the citrus, or you can have berries. So that's one way to get, that's one way to get a cup in. So that's a cup for breakfast. Okay. So lunch could be something like, you know, when I was talking about the inclusion in cruciferous vegetables, I forgot to mention my favorite salad green, which is, if you can see that, is arugula. So, you know, there's a lot of different salad greens out there. So, you know, there's, there's of course spinach, and then whole lettuces, and then packages that are field greens or spring mix or whatever that have a mixture of things. And so there's you know, good nutrient density to all of them. But so not only do I love the peppery kind of yummy value of arugula, but guess what? It's cruciferous. Out of all those salad greens, you know, spinach and lettuce and Swiss chard, you know, all those things that are also yummy and delicious, but this is plus, it's cruciferous, you know. So here's a yummy lunch that I have, and then I'm going to show you actually what I ate for lunch and what I might eat for dinner in between this seminar and the next seminar. So you can take a couple of handfuls of this arugula, drizzle some nice olive oil over it, heat up some more of those leftover cruciferous vegetables, and then you could put, you know, a piece of cooked salmon. You could sear some shrimp or scallops, or you could make a salmon salad. So this is another thing. Wait, I'm going to move some food to the floor and see what my cat does with the rest of it. But then another thing that I've been making, especially in quarantine, because, you know, I don't always get fresh fish, is some stuff with canned fish. And so, I'll tell you a story about a canned fish story in a moment. But one of the things that I make regularly is salmon salad instead of tuna salad. Of course, you could do this with tuna as well. I like to use salmon because it has slightly more omega-3 fatty acids. That's another one of my favorite nutrients that I'll talk to you about a little more. And but the salmon has a little more omega-3 fatty acids and a little less, not really a presence of mercury as well. So I love to use this. And when I make a salmon salad, I also put in, and anybody who wants to reach out to me, because of course I do private clients, and I share a lot of ideas and strategies as to how to implement the things that I'm talking about. I also am doing another webinar that's listed on my website that's happening on May 19th. And anybody who registers, because it costs $25, anybody who registers gets a 30-minute complimentary consult. And I'll share recipes and all that stuff. But so I make a salmon salad that has pepitas, which are pumpkin seeds. So that's also filled with magnesium, another great nutrient, zinc. It also has fresh dill, onions, dried cranberries, capers, some olive oil, and maybe a little mustard. Delicious. So what I just told you is I built a yummy, flavor-filled plate out of my arugula, then with roasted vegetables on top, and then a big scoop of the salmon salad on top of that. Does that sound good? Any heads? Nodding. Well, I'll tell you that it actually does taste really good. And then another thing that I'm going to show you that is what I had for lunch, and I'll tell you, I'm going to pull in some of these different ideas. We can move on to the next slide, because of course I got stuck and I have expanded on this before. But so the thing that I made that I'm going to show you, I don't know if you're actually going to be able to see, but you can see a little variety of colors. What I have here as the base of this bowl is a black bean spaghetti. So I personally do not eat regular pasta. I'm a gluten and dairy free girl, and you know, kind of low on grains as well. But this black bean spaghetti is an amazing nutrient superstar bomb. So as we talk about what you're looking at now, consuming adequate protein, this pasta, if I were in a grocery store with you, I would hold up the nutrition facts and compare, you know, this to, for instance, regular pasta. Now, I will tell you this, that the calories are pretty much the same. So for a 2 ounce serving, the calories are 180, sometimes it's 200. The protein here, because the only ingredient here is black beans, the only ingredient. So it's not like there's a protein powder or anything else in here, but the protein content here for this 2 ounces, 180 calories, is 25 grams. That's almost as much as 4 ounces of, like 4 ounces of a quarter pounder hamburger. Okay. And it also has 11 grams of dietary fiber, which means that it can help lower cholesterol, help lower blood sugar. So the net carbohydrates is very low. The other thing it's amazingly high in is potassium. So 1100 milligrams potassium, that's like eating 3 bananas, which also helps to control our blood pressure. So many different things. So this is a nutritional superstar that I've mixed with arugula, roasted cauliflower, anchovies, which is another, you know, easy, delicious. Now, even if you think you don't like anchovies, you might think that that's because you don't like to eat a whole anchovy like on a pizza or something. But if you chop it up and dissolve it in olive oil, it totally melts. It's very high omega-3 fatty acid. It's a very clean, low contaminant fish. And it has it packs a lot of flavor. So it's salty and adds some body. The other thing I have in here is some olives, scallions, garlic. So you see how I'm getting all of the categories that I've been telling you about that are food is medicine superstar categories. So I have cruciferous, I have garlic, I have onions, I have omega-3 fatty acids and protein. I have fresh fresh dill and fresh cilantro. So and olives, chopped olives, 2 different kinds, my favorite kinds. So what I'm telling you here is this is filled with all kinds of good stuff. And it tastes really good. So the idea is to have food be a treat and a joy of life, to be a reward in a space where we have maybe, you know, not as much distraction and rewards as we usually do. That it's not like to have enjoyable food to share with our families or to eat by ourselves. That it has to be, you know, Twinkies and sweets or cheeseburgers and pasta or, you know, regular pasta or whatever. It can be, and it doesn't have to be, you know, exclusively that, but it can be really, really therapeutic foods. So when I was talking about consuming adequate protein, attempt to consume adequate protein so that we have all that we need to produce natural killer cells, excuse me, and all of the different components of our immune system that we need to fight disease. A good rule of thumb, as I have written right in this bullet point, is about 1 gram per kilogram of body weight. So you can do that, do the calculation and take your pounds and divide it by 2.2, which is the factor to divide it by. Or you can just say, I'm going to give you an example. If you weigh 150 pounds, just cut it in half, just divide it by 2 instead of 2.2. So if you weigh 150 pounds, try to go for 75 grams of protein a day. If you weigh 200 pounds, try to go for 100 grams of protein. If you weigh 130 pounds, which is closer to where I am, I'm going to try to get about 65 grams of protein. And the different ways to get that, I'll talk about that for just a moment. The different ways to try to get that are, you know, every ounce of animal protein, I'm going to just do it as an example. So it's all very similar, whether we're talking about fish, which you get it. I'm promoting fish for the omega-3 fatty acid, the anti-inflammatory properties, and the neurotransmission properties, the heart healthy properties. It helps to lower our triglycerides. It, you know, can also help to raise our good cholesterol or HDL. It can also help stabilize cardiac arrhythmias. So there's a lot of magical things that the omega-3 fatty acids do for us. But so besides those, one ounce of fish, one egg, 1 ounce of chicken, or any kind of meat. And you see my suggestion is we want to try for, you know, cleaner sources of animal protein, but each ounce is about 7 grams. Okay. So if it's about 7 grams, that's the reason why I said that serving of black bean pasta was kind of like eating a quarter pounder, because, you know, four ounces of animal protein is going to be something like 28 grams. The other thing is, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to eat animal protein to get enough protein. And also know this, that every serving of vegetables, and you get it, it's not like every serving of vegetables is 2 cups. Every serving is 1/2 cup. Each serving of vegetables has about 2 grams of protein. So if you are eating 4 cups of vegetables, I'm just going to, you know, just going to use that example. If you're eating 4 cups of vegetables, every cup has about 4 grams. So 4 cups is 16 grams. Okay. And nuts also have protein. And of course, another thing that I'm going to talk about, excuse me, I have a little frog in my throat. Another way, you know, something that I think is on the next slide that we'll see how far we get. Another way to get a little more protein is, you know, we can make some beautiful soup with all of these vegetables as well. So we can make a quick soup that's filled with cruciferous vegetables, maybe some additional beans or lentils. I believe that I shared a recipe with Kathy. Did I send that to you, Kathy? Or if not, then I will send it on. But I call it my kitchen sink immune boosting soup that has cruciferous vegetables, bone broth, if you, as long as you eat animal protein. Bone broth is an interesting product. Of course, you can make this from scratch, which is wonderful. It's a labor intensive process, so I don't do that usually. But so you can buy it boxed. And the interesting difference between bone broth and regular broth, you know, to use as a base for soup, or to drink, to just use as one of the warm liquids that we're drinking, is that the only ingredient that's different in bone broth and regular stock is that there's the chicken or the meat, the vegetables, the spices, and the thing that makes it special and why you call it bone broth is when you add apple cider vinegar or some other source of acid, it makes the bones give up their protein and their collagen. So there's a lot of extra amazing nutrients. So if you were once again to look at the nutrition facts of a bone broth versus a regular broth, you'll see that, you know, there should be, if it says natural flavor, that means that there's some vinegar in it. But for instance, this 1 cup has 10 grams of protein. 1 cup of regular broth has 1 or 2 grams of protein. So it really, that addition of the acid, the apple cider vinegar, allows the bones to give up their magical, their magical composition, the protein and the collagen. The collagen does us some good as well. So meanwhile, you know, 1 cup of this has 10 grams of protein. And of course we can have tofu and beans and nuts. So there are many, of course, vegetarian or vegan sources of protein. But this is just to give you the idea, and of course seeds as well. And another thing that I'm just going to mention quickly is if you're trying to get a good amount of omega-3 fatty acids besides supplements or besides animal sources, the seeds that you want to look for are flaxseed, chia seed, and hemp seed, all of which have some special qualities. But the one that has the most protein is hemp hearts, which are nutty little things that only 3 tablespoons have actually have 10 grams of protein. So you kind of build that all together. It's really amazing. So let's go. Yeah, let's go next. So we've really covered some of these things already. What I'm going to also say is to definitely get into the garlic, the ginger. I'm going to say ginger and turmeric. So I don't know if you, these are whole roots. This is also a jar of turmeric, which is an anti-inflammatory spice, getting a lot of recognition. So if you look at it from a root perspective, so this is the ginger, this is the turmeric, they're in the same family. And if you break this turmeric open, you can see that it's really quite orange, orange or yellow. So it's the color that that makes curry yellow, that makes mustard yellow, and it's a very highly anti-inflammatory as well as an immune booster. Here, I'm moving this up like I'm going to move it to the next slide. So would you move it to the next slide for me, Ben? Okay, so quickly, because of course I'm already going long, I just want to say that this is a food-first proposition, and you got an idea of some of the things that I'm suggesting to include and really increase in your diet, as well as some ideas for how to facilitate that increase. But I always think that as an insurance policy, it's really great to to take some supplements as well. But it's not like just taking supplements is going to take care of eating bad food, especially during this period where we want to optimally boost our immune systems. I want you to take a look at this list that is in front of you right now. Certainly vitamin D is a really important one to supplement. It's not ubiquitous in food, and it's not like most of us are spending enough time in the sunshine or that we can even absorb it that well anyway. But if you don't know what your serum levels of vitamin D are, that would be something I would ask my physician to check. But definitely you want to supplement that to get it into more optimal levels. You see the rest of those things, vitamin C, fish oil, and zinc are also really important. But the ones that really are immune boosters, so vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc. And zinc especially can be lozenges. And there's some research that shows that zinc lozenges, because it's ingested locally. So you're sucking on it, you're swallowing it, you're bathing your tissues in it, that it can neutralize microbes, right in the mouth. So I'm going to also then suggest go ahead and look at the next slide. There's another list for those of you who would like to expand the supplement regimen to include lots of things that there are that there's some evidence that can be helpful from an immune boosting perspective and some other health perspectives. But so that's a well-researched list, but definitely you see the final comment there, which, it's not necessary to take all of those things, but it is a good idea to take a multivitamin, D, fish oil, C, and zinc, and then you will be, you will be addressing your immune levels as well as your inflammation levels. So I think that is there another one after that, Ben? Is there another page? Yeah. Okay. So certainly then some of the other lifestyle practices that are really important. So I really showcased nutrition and getting that to a more optimal place. But there's no doubt that to really armor ourselves to boost our resilience as well as our immunity, the sleep, the exercise, the idea of course. Now I also am I'm a certified yoga instructor and meditation, and practice that regularly. It's a lifesaver. If I weren't doing that on a daily basis, it's a good thing I live alone. or it might hurt somebody. I'm not sure how well that would go. And the wonderful thing now is, even if you're stuck inside, on YouTube, there's such a wealth of yoga and meditation. And I remember that when I spoke at the Boston in Boston a year ago, we talked about meditation app, which is one of my favorites, called Insight Timer. That there's an amazing an amazing wealth of 25,000 guided meditations. And sometimes what we need, even if we think, oh no, I'm not good at meditating, I can't still the squirrels and monkeys that are running around in my mind and carrying it to different, to bad places. That sometimes what we need then is the voice, the change the channel voice, right in your ear. And that's the reason why guided meditations can be, can be really amazing. So I encourage you to investigate that. Insight Timer is a wonderful free, free app. And so is there one after that? Okay, there we go. And then of course, the laughter thing, which is an amazing thing to do whether you're alone or whether you're with family. So this is something where, again, that in these times, there's such a wealth of material available. So whether that means that you're getting on and, looking up George Carlin or Carol Burnett Show or All in the Family or I Love Lucy or whatever, whether that's alone or with others, it's an amazing it's an amazing thing to do for ourselves. And it's very clear, even the mechanisms by which laughter boosts our immune system and by which fear, anxiety, and panic are immunosuppressive. So we need a leveling. We need to concentrate on making some structure that allows this to be a regular feature in our daily lives. I think is that it? Is that the last slide? Okay, there you go. So let me just say, I didn't quite mean to talk, to talk this long, but we covered a lot of ground here, and I hope it was helpful and instructive enough. And I would love to, hear some questions. Great. Questions or comments.
Lori, thank you so much. We'll open it up for questions, and we have a couple in the chat room that I'll run through, as well as we were sent some beforehand.
Yep.
And again, to raise your hand, it's on the participant tab that's down at the bottom of your screen, has a number 95 next to it. You can click on that participant button. It'll open up a list, and there's a gray button at the bottom of that little box that opens up that says raise hand. And just hit raise hand. That'll put you to the top of the queue. And if you have a question you want to ask and you're on the phone, you can hit *9. Now, of course, I know some people sent questions in, even in the chat function, people are putting questions in. Some are going to be so detailed that, Lori's going to be able to hit some of the fringes of some of your questions. You might have to see a local nutritionist or talk to your rheumatologist about as well. And sometimes, I'm sure Lori will agree, sometimes it's really practice and just trying different things to see what works for you and what doesn't, without putting your health at risk, of course, if you know there's something you should avoid. But sometimes not every body and every person is going to be the same. And as you can see in some of the chat questions, there's complications that multiple issues that patients have. Every patient is a little bit different. But I guess the first question on there, I don't know if I will hit every question. I'll try to jump back and forth between chat room and if there's any participant questions. But if you aren't able to eat chrysisophus or album or nightshades, I don't know what that, that eliminates quite a bit, I guess. What would you suggest to substitute in there, Lori?
Okay. So, so a lot of people who have autoimmune functions, autoimmune issues, as well as things like irritable bowel syndrome, have some problems with cruciferous vegetables and allium vegetables. And of course, nightshades are a trigger for lots of people with autoimmune conditions, and in particular, rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis, et cetera. So that does take out a lot. However, you could always look at, now it's not totally complete either, but you also could look at, and maybe you've already done this, a low FODMAP list. Now it doesn't, not going to have the same, just exactly the same nutrients as the cruciferous and allium, et cetera, but a low FODMAP list still will have, vegetables on there like, like carrots and green beans and some other things that still have vitamins and minerals and antioxidants. And there are supplements. Like, so for instance, cruciferous vegetables, some of the nutrients are available in supplement form that you may not be that you may not be sensitive to, and so there are many different manufacturers that do things like that, and one of them is indoles, and it, so you know there's a lot of names to those phytochemicals that have those properties, but sometimes the supplementation can help. And otherwise, just look for the vegetables that you tolerate. The other thing is, sometimes it is dose dependent. Another thing that I do is I have another certification that's a certified LEAP therapist. I work with a blood test that actually looks at what mediators your immune system reacts to, and then implement a food plan that's called an ImmunoCalm food plan that takes out all of those for a while, and then adds some things in small amounts, because sometimes it's the layering on of one thing after another that you react to that results in discomfort. Sometimes you can experiment and work with a practitioner. So it may be a local practitioner, and of course I'm working remotely with folks now if you would like to reach out. So
thanks, Lori. I do have, we have a question. We'll bring in Sherry in a second, but I did want to mention, we had a couple questions on sent to us beforehand as well, in regards to what diet works for patients. And we do sell a number of books on our website that offer different types of plans, the autoimmune disease protocol, that we have a web book that's available online on our website, plus a couple others on there as well. And sometimes it really takes, like I mentioned, trial and error to see what works for you and what doesn't. And there's been discussions about what products or items of food cause a flare. And we really don't have a great map of that in regards to what actually caused the flare. It's kind of following a better immune system plan to help build your immune system up to avoid as much as you can from the disease. But there isn't one diet, as the question was asked before the conference call they sent to us. Is there one diet that proves to cure Sjogren's? And there surely is not. And I will tell you that a number of years ago, Venus Williams, who is a pro tennis star who has Sjogren's, went on and had an article in People magazine talking about how she went vegetarian and I believe vegan too, and that cured her Sjogren's. The challenge was when she did the interview with the People magazine, it was done in September, October. By the time it printed in December, while it was actually on the stands, she was back in the hospital with a really bad flare. And so surely you see a change when you make a change in your diet, and you'll know long-term if that's going to work. You might see an immediate change that's for the better because your body's getting new nutrients, different ways you're eating, et cetera, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's cured your Sjogren's long-term. There's not much science in there. The challenge with science on nutrition is there, it's hard to do research on nutrition without locking people into a building and monitoring everything they put in their mouth. And that's why a lot of stuff has not been done on autoimmune diseases. So it's more on theory than it is actually on science. So I just throw that out to you. So Lori's ideas are phenomenal because she kind of goes all over and gives you all different options. The same with our books. You're going to read a book and you're going to follow something. And some people I know, I can see their faces, love certain plans that they've been following. And I encourage you, if it works for you, stick with it. And then just know that if it's not working, you can try something different. And of course, work with a professional like Lori as well. So let's bring Sherry in with her question. Sherry? I think Ben's going to unmute you, Sherry. I hope. Yep, there you are. You're free. Yep.
Hi, Lori. First, I want to thank you so much. That was excellent information. Got some great ideas. I'm about to go to Trader Joe after this, so awesome. Definitely going to be looking for some of the stuff that you mentioned. I have two quick questions. In regards to autoimmune diseases, and of course, especially Sjogren's, you always hear, this might be a silly question, to follow anti-inflammatory foods. Are anti-inflammatory foods and nutrients the same thing as you were describing immune boosting? Is that the same thing?
Okay, that is such an excellent question. That's the reason why it's such an interesting idea that sometimes people think that things are in a silo. You know, this is anti-inflammatory, this is immune boosting, this helps autoimmune, this helps fight cancer, when in fact, you know, there's so much crossover. So anti-inflammatory and immune boosting, I'm going to say it's not like it's the exact same thing, but most of the foods in the bucket that are particularly anti-inflammatory are also immune boosting. I have mentioned, you know, there's so many great books out there that is true. And the fact that, you know, different foods resonate perfectly with different people, especially based on their own individual biochemistry, which is something that, you know, you can look at what the general characteristics of the foods are, and then you can look at that's where that mediator related testing, that MRT, sometimes helps with people. But so, for instance, a book that actually assigns a value, an anti-inflammatory value, this book I came upon, it's at least 10 years ago, that I really liked. It's called the Inflammation Free Diet Plan. The author's name was Monica Reinagel, but there were a couple of doctors, in with that. But they tested, I think it was like 1,500 different foods, and went through an algorithm and then assigned them each an anti-inflammatory value. Okay, so I'm going to give you an example. So from the positive to zero to the negative. So just an example is, so 3 ounces of wild salmon or 4 ounces of wild salmon, that's one of the most anti-inflammatory foods and nutrients there are. Now, that doesn't mean that you want to eat all salmon. I mean, rainbow-colored vegetables that are filled with antioxidants and herbs and spices, that they all have different anti-inflammatory properties. But so let's say that that piece of salmon gets a 500. And then at the other end of the spectrum, something like a Twinkie, okay, where what we have is, you know, white flour, white sugar, shortening, you know, things that really are things that are really harmful in a number of ways. So that would be a minus 500, like so a pro-inflammatory to the nth degree. So if you wanted to look at that book, I mean, it's interesting just to, because some of it is counterintuitive, but some of it is, you know, the really high omega-3 fatty acid fish and seeds and rainbow colored vegetables and fruits, although fruits are a little bit lower in the anti-inflammatory perspective because also they're high sugar, high carbohydrate, and there's some inflammatory value there. So there's a bunch of different things going on, but in terms of what is anti-inflammatory and what is immune boosting, I also encourage you, even though a lot of the article that I wrote is in the PowerPoint presentation that Ben so skillfully put together. But if you look at my website, I wrote an article that's a blog post that's about immune boosting foods, and so it just gives you an overview. So you know, take my web address and feel free to do that. Does that answer? Does that give you a little bit of?
It does. It does. I was just curious if it was, because I always hear anti-inflammatory and I haven't really heard the phrase immune boosting. Before I get to my next question, unfortunately, as healthy as fish is, I'm not a fish eater. I don't care for fish, never. So can I get enough of the immune boosting? I do love cruciferous vegetables. I love nuts and seeds. Can I get enough of the good nutrients without eating fish?
Okay, so that's a great question. So those other nutrients, you know, cruciferous vegetables and nuts and seeds and all those beautiful things and berries, there's lots of great stuff there. But if you want to really enhance the anti-inflammatory nature of your diet and maybe smooth out some of the, autoimmune conditions are inflammatory conditions. Okay. So if you want to crank up the anti-inflammatory value, you need to take a good fish oil. And it also, because it is a good fish oil, have you done that?
I've tried it and I always get the regurgitating taste of the fish because I don't like the taste of fish.
Yep. Okay. So there's some different ways. And I mean, that's more of an individual discussion. I happen to feel that there could be ways that you could tolerate it most likely. And then if not, then there are some other options. But so that would be something good to work out. But I would kick up the omega-3 fatty acid in your diet because that will provide some anti-inflammatory you know, value to you.
Okay. So two quick more is, can you repeat the name of the book again? And where do you find the black bean pasta?
Okay. Okay. So the name of the book is The Inflammation-Free Diet Plan by Monica Reinagel. Her name is spelled, I believe, R-E-I-N-A-G-E-L. She also started nutritiondata.com, I think, which is a big website that's nutrient analysis, and the black bean pasta. Well, I got it at Whole Foods, but I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They do sell it other places, or you could get it online. It's Explore. The brand name is Explore, and it's delicious. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks, Sherry. Yeah.
Thanks.
We'll bring in Bonnie with a question.
Yep.
Bonnie, you're unmuted. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
I can.
I can. Yeah.
Okay. So I unfortunately came in very late to your discussion, and I will watch it again so that I get everything. But as far as you mentioned the fish oil, does flaxseed oil do the same thing? Because it has the 3-6-9s.
Right. Okay.
So that's the first question. And then I wanted some examples, maybe you already gave them, of the different probiotics, and how do you know what is a good probiotic? Because there's so many out there.
There's so many out there. That's true. Okay. So those are great questions. So I'm first going to answer the flax oil 3-6-9 thing. Okay. So particularly for people with Sjogren's, I mean, flax oil is good. It helps with it, flax oil, flax seed. And I provide people with recipes and ideas as to how to utilize more flax seed, et cetera. Especially for people with Sjogren's, flax oil has been shown to enhance eye moisture, so as a kind of a direct thing. However, if you're talking about systemic anti-inflammatory properties, I would do all of it. I eat flaxseed. Well, I think we don't have Sjogren's, okay? But I would eat flaxseed. Maybe take some flax oil, but inflammation is at the root of all disease, escalating the aging process, all of it. So to really neutralize or to balance more of the inflammatory state, I would definitely. I think that everybody should take fish oil. I mean, I'm not a doctor, I'm a dietitian, okay? But for all the reasons, the other thing is, it definitely helps. I don't know what, whatever your situation is, it helps to lower triglycerides, it helps to raise HDL. It helps, and it definitely helps from a neurotransmission perspective. It's been shown that it helps to support psych med effectiveness. So I'm talking about antidepressants, SSRIs, all that kind of stuff. So, does flax have some of that? Flax has some of that, but especially for eye moisture for people with Sjogren's. But in terms of just the general good that omega-3 does, flax doesn't. Flax is ALA. Fish oil is EPA and DHA, and those are the ones that do the work we're looking for. And flax the ALA doesn't convert well, and some people it doesn't convert well at all. That doesn't mean that it's not of value, and that doesn't mean that for people with Sjogren's, you still should take it because it may help lubricate your eyes. I hope that's a long-winded answer to a question. And then the other thing that you were asking about is probiotics. There's so much information out there, that again, I would say is more of a private, a private conversation. So of course there are foods that you can eat that contain some. I'm actually drinking a drink right now. It's a treat for me that I like. This is Kavita, which is a lime mint coconut beverage that has some probiotic cultures in it. But I absolutely would take a probiotic. And sometimes when you start a new one, sometimes it causes some GI distress. I mean, because it's different bacteria. But And then you know, look for the best rated ones, and then see what works for you. But or talk to your whomever you work with, or feel free to consult with me. I mean, that's also what I do more and more remotely. I mean, we do everything like this now. You know, we do everything like this. So I hope that helped.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Bonnie. And Lori, I'll wrap up with this last question. It's an easy question, but actually I'm curious about it too. Terry online just asked us, can we, is black beans just as healthy as black bean pasta?
Well, of course, the answer is, generally speaking, whole foods are always best, you know? Black beans are fabulous. I mean, they have all of the nutrients, of course, that this does. But because there's no other ingredient in here and it's ground up and extruded, this is a more concentrated source of the protein and the fiber and the potassium. Like, so if you would eat 180 calories worth of black beans, you wouldn't get anywhere near the nutrient facts that I just read off from here, because we're talking about ground up, the moisture squeezed out, you know, so this is like a concentrated source of it. But yeah, absolutely, always whole foods first. This is just another way to, you know, to concentrate a protein source and all that. Great. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Can you just mention the book one more time? Because I'm going to type it into the chat room.
So as you said, there's so many fabulous books out there that you have, and you know, the first conference that I went to I was invited to speak at, which was Chicago, I think, in 2014. That was when Susan Bloom's book, you know, and so I got familiar with her book from you. There's so many great ones. Amy Myers, The Autoimmune Solution. You know, Terry Walls. The Walls Protocol, there's so many of them. But so the one that I'm talking about, I actually knew before that. And so it's just, this is interesting just because of this ranking or rating, this algorithm and application of numbers. So, and that is, it's called the Inflammation-Free Diet Plan. The author's name is Monica Reinagel, Reinagel. Yep.
So I just wrote a couple of the books down on their Inflammation Solution. Of course, The Immune System Recovery Plan by Dr. Bloom. She also wrote Healing Arthritis, which is another book. And then, of course, this new book Lori just mentioned, Inflammation-Free Diet Plan,
which is older than this. Yeah, so I don't know if you ever promote, you know, Amy Meyer stuff or Terry Walls stuff. I mean, that's, you know, different. Of course, Terry Walls, you know, that's a very interesting book, and you know, her thing is MS. There's a lot of interesting theories and recommendations and all that.
Absolutely. So and we'll look into a couple of them for our organization as well. So
yeah.
But I appreciate your time, Lori. Thanks everyone for hanging in there. I know we hardly lost anyone, Lori. So you did you kept everyone's attention, and we appreciate all the great ideas. She's back on at 8:00 tonight if you want to listen back in. And of course, we hope to see you next Tuesday on our call on products with the representatives from various companies that we've invited to present. And of course, the week after, the medical and scientific update. In addition, I encourage you to go watch the last couple. If you've not, on our website, you can find last week, and I see Mary Weissman is on today, Mary's wonderful exercise presentation she gave this past Tuesday. And then last week, Creative Ways to Stay Busy. Both of those are available on our website as well. So I encourage you to take a look at those. I think the exercise one, we all need to watch and slow down and practice as we watch her, because Mary was phenomenal with some great tips. So I encourage you to go check that one out. And we videoed the whole presentation, including Mary doing the various sampling of what she suggests to strengthen yourself and what kind of exercises you can do while at home. So with that, thank you again, Lori, and everyone else, stay safe. Social distance and wash those hands, as we say. So thanks so much, guys. Bye.
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 Yep. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Awesome. Bye-bye.